The following is a Bachelor of Arts production.
Previously on the Supporting Act podcast.
And in the future, when the robot-human wars are happening, it'll be one of the ways that we test to see if someone's a robot infiltrating. We'll be like, you have to do an improv stand-up routine.
This week on a very special Supporting Act podcast.
We drag somebody up on stage and lock them in a room for an hour.
You're listening to episode number 43 of the Supporting Act podcast, in which I sit down with singer-songwriter, children's entertainer Fred Penner. Stay tuned, you might learn something. Welcome to episode number 43 of the Supporting Act podcast. My name is Matt Moskal. I'll be your host. I'm a musician by trade, a journalist by education, and if I had 100 sandwiches, I'd eat them all at once. If you're unfamiliar with the show, this is the program where we illuminate the careers of comedians, musicians, and artists just shy of the mainstream spotlight. It is an independently produced podcast that is brought to you every week via iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Liberated Syndication, sometimes on showbizmonkeys.com, and of course on Tumblr. My guest on this week's show is legendary singer, songwriter, and children's entertainer, the one, the only, Fred Penner. Fred joined me in the UMFM studio in Winnipeg, Manitoba, to talk about his storied career, as well as a number of other subjects close to his heart. He also performs a couple of songs at the end of the episode. If you're unfamiliar with Fred's career, he really picked up a lot of steam back in 1979 for his cover of Harry Smith's The Cat Came Back.
The cat came back the very next day. The cat came back. They thought he was a goner, but the cat came back. Just wouldn't stay away.
Now, the reason most of us would know Fred Penner is from his television series, Fred Penner's Place. That's the one where he crawled through the log at the start. Now, this ran on the CBC for 12 years, from 1985 to 1997. During this time, Fred earned himself an Order of Canada for using music and song to entertain and educate his young audience. Now, since the show has ended, Fred has made 3 albums. He continues to tour the folk music circuit, playing shows for both children and adults. And in 2011, he was awarded the Order of Manitoba. He and his full band are performing on Saturday, October the 4th, at the Pyramid Cabaret as part of Breakout West. For those unfamiliar with Breakout West, it is an annual festival, conference, and awards ceremony held by the Alberta Music Industry Association, SASC Music, Manitoba Music, Music BC, Music Yukon, and Music Northwest Territories. The event runs in various venues across the city from October 2nd to October the 5th. The festival includes performances by Dan Mangan, Deep Dark Woods, Wet Secrets, We Were Lovers, as well as Manitoba locals, The Mariachi Ghost, Honolulu, Federal Lights, Vampires, and Latka. So while Penner serves as an ambassador to Manitoba music, he also bridges the gap between audiences young and old. It was one of the great pleasures of my life to sit down with Fred Penner. So let's go to that interview now. Comfortable as humanly possible, and just make sure the levels are looking
testing.
Okay.
Testing. Oh yeah, there they are.
There you are. You're on the sonar screen. You're like the blip.
Perfect. I love the blips. I love those things.
Yeah.
I've often thought that those perspectives, when you're looking at a recording, the bars going by, that it looks a lot like the northern scans of a lake.
Yeah.
Like when you look at a lake, you see the trees in the back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you took a picture of one of those, mirror image tree things.
Yeah.
And somehow converted that into a wave form.
Yeah.
What would it sound like? I mean, it'd be impossible because the waves are anything. It could be music or sound, but you know what I mean?
Well, how would you, like, I guess you'd use a piano probably to play that out, right?
Well, if you could some way take that picture, that photograph, that mirror image,
yeah,
and do a photograph of that and put it into a program, so you at least have the levels and the framework of that,
yeah,
and then try and adapt an instrument into it.
I think it's
an interesting concept.
Yeah.
I'm going to make an app about that one.
You
That's
should do that.
That's going to be my app world. good luck.
It sounds like an old
breath here.
Zappa composition he did where he just had just had a bunch of random notes like, here's the time signature, make up whatever you want in this part of the song. Just make
Bowie
sure it's
did
key.
A lot of that kind of stuff.
Where oh, really?
Where he had, there was a Bowie exhibit in Toronto. It's touring.
Yeah.
It was in Toronto a few months ago. And there's this one section where he created a computer program which had elements that he could input into it. So a favorite line or a favorite chord or a favorite something and you could sort of look at it and randomly put them together and it would link topics. I mean, it really a complicated,
no kidding,
beautiful thing. It's worth tracking down. David Bowie's computer songwriting software, something like that.
Did you ever get the temptation to sort of like, I know Neil Young did like that Trans album, and I know you went to high school with Neil Young, right?
Yeah.
And was there ever the inspiration to sort of deviate from sort of the folky sound, or?
Well, not really. That was I was the very straight-laced kid back in those days. I was the operetta guy.
Yeah.
You know, I played character roles in the Gilbert and Sullivan stuff and in drama productions or in the choral work.
Yeah.
Men's choir or mixed choir, and I mean it was pretty straight-laced stuff. And then the folk world. I mean, when the Beatles came out, you know, I learned the Beatles tunes.
Yeah.
And I would play them on the ski buses as we drove up to McCreary. I'm in the back of the bus singing the tunes, everybody singing along. So that was my world.
Yeah.
I was never really into the rock side of it as it was sort of unfolding around me.
Yeah.
I just got off in a different direction. I'm more into it now than I was then.
Yeah, there was no, like, finally the children's entertainers are taking acid kind of phase.
Yeah, really. Not quite.
No.
No, the children's entertaining path didn't really come until the late 70s. Prior to that, I was touring with Al Simmons in a band called Cornstalk. We played the U of M a few times and across the country doing. It was a comedy show band, you know, where we were very high energy, very theatrical, a lot of spontaneous things happening with the audience where they would, we'd drag somebody up on stage and lock them in a room for an hour and a half and then, you know, and funny things like that.
That sounds like the old, the Mr. Showbit they used to do where they'd have the three goofballs and they'd have the three boxes and David Cross would come out of one box and then Bob Odenkirk would come out of the other box and then they'd shake the other box for the other guy to come out and then they'd open it up and a body would fall out.
Oh yeah. That's a good bit.
Yeah.
No, that was one of the highest points of my performing career.
Yeah.
Is just learning to work spontaneously the way that we did with Cornstalk. Because Al is the king of spontaneity.
Yeah.
And I learned some really good skills from him and he from me. And then at the end of that trip, I did a lot of musical comedy, you know, following the high school world, doing Rainbow Stage, character roles and Fiddler on the Roof and Hello Dolly and The King and I, that kind of stuff. And then it all just kept molding and flowing from there.
Yeah. So you started off with more of a, after of course the after school entertainment, you started off in more of a comedy audience. Were they going for a music show or were they going for the hijinks? When you were doing Cornstalk with Al?
It was music because we did some respectable, you know, rock and country and almost ballad types things along the way, but there was always that little corner of humor that would come out of it. So it was crazy because you never knew what was going to go on.
No,
you know, we did some old commercial bits and it was, as I said, really spontaneous. So it would take a tangent that would flip people upside down. What are they doing? He's dancing on the pool table. What?
Yeah.
You know, so it confused a lot of people and that they seemed to like coming to the bar to have their brains jangle just a little bit.
So you start off in bars and then you progress to working for what I think are ostensibly a bunch of tiny little hippies basically.
Totally.
Children. They all just want to be naked all the time. They just want love. They just want to, you know, hug up against each other and some of them even wander out on stage while you're playing, right?
That's happened. Just drifting up. They feel the energy. it's like the Pied Piper, and they come forward and connect with you. There's been some really lovely pieces like that. But yeah, once the, I mean, I did a lot of work with special needs kids in the early part of the career, university and beyond. And music was always a part of my communication with them, obviously. From psychotic and autistic and schizophrenic kids to behavior problem. I mean, that whole Knowles School for Boys, Children's Home of Winnipeg world. And I gained, and I had a sister who was a Down syndrome child. So all of those elements combined to form my philosophy of there is absolute value in the music for changing the lives of the people around you, children especially.
Yeah, because music therapy is for example, I have friends who have Asperger's. Sorry, I was going to say autism, you got to make the distinction there. I have friends who have Asperger's that are they do aspire to be musicians and stand-up comedians, and they do aspire to cross over into that world, which is interesting in the context that they're not particularly socially savvy, but rather this is sort of, it's almost like a challenge for them. It's like a puzzle for them. I mean, what have you found in terms of music as a form of therapy for people? What are your sort of scientific discoveries, Professor, if I may?
Well, scientific discoveries, I don't know. What I've always tried to bring to the table is as non-condescending and direct an approach as possible. I don't assume any kind of affected voice. I will project larger when I'm on stage. I am really conscientious of the flow of a performance from the beginning to the end. So it is about the performance, but it's more about the link with the audience. So I will ask questions, and often rhetorical questions, so that I don't get into, you know, intense dialogue, because with 1,000 people it could get a little off the track. But asking questions that are easily answered by anybody in the audience. Do you have a pet?
Sure. I used to.
Right. So there's the question to the audience. Do you have a pet? I've got. Do you have a gerbil, hamster, rabbit, bird, dog? You know, and then I'll go through a list and say, do you have a cat? And it's, oh, I know what's coming. So you play it that way. So you engage the audience in a real question, and there will be response of some sort. Again, not just from the child, but from the parent and the grandparents. So the universal concept is really important. So you can present something to an audience. They will all feel part of it. You go into a song that isn't just for the child. It's for the whole unit. In the course of my shows now, maybe 10% or less even would be specifically children-oriented things. If I do a hand game, hand rhyme, like Itsy Bitsy Spider went up the water spout, do the finger thing. But even when I'm setting that up, I don't just go into it. I say, here's something that's going to take you back to another time of your life. This is an early memory. So it is relating to the child who maybe just learned this a couple of days ago, but at the same time it's going to the parent and the grandparent saying, do you remember when you learned this?
Right. Well, it's storytelling, right? It's a huge part of it. Is you're letting them visualize something. You're letting their imagination fill in the blanks, so to speak. And that's a big part of storytelling. That's why so many people play, Dungeons and Dragons, for example. For example, I'm learning to play Leroy Brown on guitar right now.
Yeah, I heard you hitting a couple of lyric lines there before.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Have you learned it?
I know how to play it, but I can't quite get the lyrics down. But the best part about that song is it's a story, right?
So great story.
Exactly. You take two verses to
Leroy
build up
Leroy Brown
this
looked like a jigsaw puzzle with a couple of pieces gone. Oh, Jimmy, you passed too soon.
Exactly. And that's another thing, too, is that story follows the basic functions of storytelling. You have this character. You create a character. You find them in his comfort zone. He finds something he wants. He loses that thing he wants or pays a heavy price for it, and then his life is either all the better for it or everything as it was before he was in that situation.
Sure.
And that's something that I think about a lot when it comes to songwriting and playing to any audience for that matter. And that is the idea of engaging them with something they can relate to. And you said earlier, children don't want to be talked down to. Children want to be addressed.
Well, they don't know the difference.
Yes.
I've had intense discussions with television producers about this one.
Yeah.
And kids don't know the difference between good and bad necessarily.
Yeah.
So if you give them schlock, then they'll think that that's what it is, what it should be.
Right.
And if you give them good direct contact, then hopefully that will sink in a little deeper and they will start to see pieces in their life that do make more connection to that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting perspective, you know, when you analyze, you know, back to the concept of therapeutic value of the music.
Right.
If you present honesty and direct communication and elements that the child can relate to, then you are getting inside their being and perhaps filling in some blanks along the way or getting their imaginations moving in a little different direction. So it's not just a lacka, 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 here's a happy song, yay kids, and you're gone.
Yeah.
It's, no, just a minute, I want to sing a song about something important. How about a song about home? Home is where the heart is. Home is where you learn to love. Say that with me, you know, and then we'll go into that tune. So it's coming up with a phrase or a concept or a musical line that has repetition to it, that gives the Peter, Paul, and Mary concept is that gives the child a false sense of security.
Yeah.
But I think it is a sense of security in truth. But it is having that analytical process with everything you do for your audience, whether it's a young audience or a rock audience or whatever it is, analyze how you are presenting this so that the audience gets the biggest value from the experience.
Right. And I'm just going to say thank you now because, you actually taught me how to play music in front of drunk people, through this process.
Oh, did I?
Yeah. I was hosting a children's
music
stage
in front of drunk people.
Yeah, I was.
Never would have put that on my resume, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was hosting a children's stage at Northern Lights Festival Boreal one year, and I caught your set, and you forced me to sing the encore with you, actually. Uh-huh. And it was in that moment I was like,
I thought we'd met before.
It was in that moment I was like, oh, there's a presence to this. There's a method here that needs to be taken seriously. And, you know, you do something really great with the folk tradition, and that is you teach the audience how to play The Cat Came Back on guitar.
Yeah. And that's just evolved, you know, fairly recently over the time, because the song, that lovely simple chord progression, the E minor D C B 7.
Yeah.
Keep spinning around, and then that evolved into Hit the Road Cat.
Yeah.
Hit the Road Jack with Ray Charles, and then into Chaos.
Yeah.
With Crab Bucket or Cat Bucket.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's part of the folk tradition is to take an element and include it into the things that, that people would know and take it a couple of steps farther.
Yeah.
And it's great fun doing that. And then almost tongue in cheek, but saying, the reason I can do that, you know, obviously, because it's a medley, is it's the same chord progression, and then saying E minor D C B 7, so that there is a bit of humor in that thing, whatever the humor is, I'm not sure, but.
Well, I think the humor is it's unexpected, and it, you know, not many people would imagine sitting in a car with you somewhere listening to Chaos together, you know?
Mm.
It comes from a different direction.
Yeah. So that's part of it is trying to push the envelope a little bit and taking it just a couple of steps away from center and throwing delicate curves at the audience that they, oh, what's that about?
Okay. Yeah. So, at one point in time, I was researching The Cat Came Back just from learning to play it, and I realized that this is, not just an old song, but this is like, there are some serious implications to the lyrics of this song.
Big time.
Not just the violence, but the original subtitle is actually something that I'm not comfortable saying.
No, exactly. No, it goes back to the minstrel shows in the 1890s.
Yeah.
And where the minstrels were in blackface.
Yeah, so it has this whole Jim Crow connection, right?
Oh my goodness, yeah. You know, but back then, and the way it was presented was not really in a slanderous way.
No.
I mean, it was part of the culture world, and it certainly wasn't slandered to African American at all.
No.
Well, it is, you're looking at it now, it certainly did have a thing, but the excitement was the song had such a wonderful storytelling quality and it engaged the audience, and as a performer, it's a delight to sing because you have that element to it that a few songs have like that.
Yeah.
It's a specific genre of tune. And it engages an audience on a really exciting level.
Do you feel like you rescued the song in a way?
Oh, totally.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, I found it in 1843. That's when I found, in 1978 or so, I was going through an old folk song book and there it was. I did remember when I was growing up in the 50s, a major version of the song. I don't know where I heard it, but you can still find it online. But
yeah,
because the one I do is the minor version, which is much more engaging.
Oh, for sure, minors are.
Yeah, minors are
unbelievably much more engaging in the world of music. That's
absolutely.
That's the emotional hook, right? And the song starts with the minor, right? You start with the E minor, which is
just keep that vamp going until it goes into the song. And
exactly.
Yeah. No. The minor certainly is that, but I remembered the phrase "The Cat Came Back" from my youth, and so there it was on the page. And I started playing and said, oh, that's different than what I recall.
Yeah.
But it was easy to jam to and fun to sing and perform. And so when it came to doing my first album, less than a year later, I thought, well, where am I going to go? I went to my childhood, songs that I remembered, like The Cat Came Back, like Ghost Riders in the Sky, like The Little White Duck. You know, I mean, tunes that weren't necessarily considered children's songs, because The Cat was a family tune from another generation. Ghost Riders was just a top 40 tune.
Yeah.
You know, so just bringing songs that connected with me that I thought, well, I want to share them with another audience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for example, like my dad gave me his copy of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band when I was growing up. And it's a similar process, only it's a wider audience. It's introducing a new generation to something that it completely opens the doors of perceptions, as you were singing Break On Through to the Other Side earlier in the jam room there.
Yeah. Well, it becomes a shared vernacular.
Right. Right. And I mean, I love going through, like, for example, like the Beatles catalog and just picking out, like, okay, what song can I sing for children? Octopus's Garden.
Yeah. Actually, I was just playing that this morning. I was doing my morning jam.
Okay.
I was jamming along with a little Miles Davis.
Okay.
Blues, songs in blue.
Okay.
On one of his albums, and you know, so just getting some finger work going.
Yeah.
And then I'm on shuffle on my iPad, and the next tune was Octopus's Garden. Which I didn't realize before. I don't know why I didn't really think about it. I knew it was going there, but it's in the key of E.
Yeah.
But the break is in A.
Yes.
I thought, well, of course, that's brilliant work. That's an incredible, an intelligent way of changing it up a little bit and making it interesting for the listener.
Yeah. Now, I understand you play a few Beatles songs in your set, and I know you're playing full band next weekend at...
I'm pumped on that. Yeah,
Breakout West at the Pyramid Cabaret.
Breakout West, Pyramid, 9 o'clock with Paul O'Neill, who's been with me for 20 years. Great. I mean, a top-notch, world-class guitar player. Karen Barg is playing fiddle with me. Much the same group that did the King's Head a while back. But this time I have bass player Gilles Fournier and drummer Christian Dugas.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be a cooking set. 45 minutes.
No kidding.
Leave no prisoners.
You know, I know the Mariachi Ghost are playing that show.
Oh,
so
are they? Okay.
I'm glad they packed it with bands that, you know, can at least live up to something with that much presence to it, right? I mean, that's just smart promoting, on their behalf anyway.
Yeah, I wasn't sure who else was playing, so good.
Yeah, cause you're on first, right?
Yeah.
Now did you personally try to get that spot?
No, they pitched it to me, and that's the right place to be.
Yeah.
Cause as the night goes on, as it gets later, you know, the audience is less inclined to.
Yeah.
To relate to my music, perhaps.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe not, because I've done closers before, and they work really well. But I think for that kind of a night, it.
Well, it's your
to get it rolling here.
It's your original audience's bedtime, and then it's your
exactly.
your nighttime audiences. That's when they come alive, right?
Yeah.
Now, so I'm actually just kind of fascinated by this whole concept of sort of being the supporting act in a way. So, like opening up the night with your set. I mean, are you? Obviously, you've been doing this for so long, like 40 years, and you're not probably not antsy going into a show like this. But do you have habits? You know, do you find yourself like, oh, I don't want to stick around this bar too much. I don't want to have too much to drink or anything like that. Or,
oh yeah, I don't know how long I'll I'll stick. And I mean, I'm a moderate drinker at best. I may do a beer.
Okay.
At night, that'll pretty much pop it up here. But it's going to be a good night. The pyramid's an odd sort of place to play.
Yeah.
But the whole event is, I mean, the whole, you know, Breakout West event will be dynamite. On Sunday, I'm playing at the Children's Museum as, you know, part of the kids component there. And then Sunday night getting the, induction into the Western Canadian Music Hall of Fame.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. After 40 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weird thing, but that'll be fun too.
There's a whole thing in the film industry where people think that like Scorsese got his Oscar way too late in his career, or some people were, you know, do you think it's the right time for you to be earning these awards, or are you kind of in the back of your mind going, where were you when The Cat Came Back was, you know flying off shelves?
You don't think any of that.
No.
No, you can't, because when you're doing, for me, doing this trip is, the rewards are manyfold and daily.
Yeah.
You know, from email or communications with people on the street. I mean, I've been fed by my audience for 40 years, and they, you know, on a beautiful personal, you know, growing level. So I feel very complete as a, you know, as a human being in this musical world. It's touching that people want to bestow honors upon me along the way, because they, I know where it comes from. It comes from a respect for the integrity that I think I brought to the table. It comes a little bit from my elder status that I'm at now in my 60s. It has some elements to it where they want to share the respect from their perspective. So I received the Vic Cowie Award with ACTRA a couple of months ago, and the Order of Manitoba and the Order of Canada. I have two honorary doctorates. The Dash Foundation had a huge luncheon for me a couple of months ago. You know, so there's these things that are coming together, and in one way they are allowing me to give my voice to another organization that's doing important stuff.
Yeah.
Like the Down Syndrome. I'm playing the Down Syndrome Buddy Walk this Sunday.
Yeah.
That's always been an important thing for me to do. You know, so you use your notoriety to the benefit of another organization, and that kind of thing is lovely. And when they in turn, you know, want to honor you for something, then it's part of the process. But there's certainly nothing about time or, you know, no sour grapes that didn't happen earlier where it wouldn't have made any difference anyway.
Yeah. Another a big accomplishment, I think I just came across this on Facebook, but I want to say that you have songwriting kind of continuing on in your family, right?
Yes, I do. Dear Haley Jean, my eldest daughter, she's 29 this November the 5th.
We'll edit that
she's
out.
Been,
We'll edit that pause
yeah.
out. No worries.
No, thank you. But she's in Toronto right now. She's been living in LA for the last couple of years. She has publishing deals with a couple of companies, BMG and Messenger.
Yeah.
She's been working with some top-notch musicians and performers and gaining a reputation as a strong songwriter for others. And for herself, and she's now on the brink of a national deal with Universal.
Yeah.
Which I talked to her yesterday, said this is happening. It's just a couple of days, a couple of details. So maybe today's Friday, maybe today. But her stage name now is W Darling.
Okay.
So listeners, do a Google on W.Darling, as in Wendy Darling from Peter Pan.
Oh.
Because she has been living in LA, as I said, and sort of the den mother for many of the young musicians from Canada who are living there now. There's a band called Magic.
Okay.
That has some dynamite songs on the chart, and the main guy there, his name is Nasri Atwar.
Okay.
And Nasri and those people have been involved with Justin Bieber and there's a pretty high level connection in there. But Haley's the go-to person for a Thanksgiving dinner or at Christmas time she'll make. So she's sort of tending to the food needs of these guys along the way.
Yeah.
And so she sees herself, I think, sometimes as the Wendy Darling of the Lost Boys. So that's where I believe W. Darling came from. But she's been doing some dynamite stuff. She's performing next, a week tomorrow, at Madison Square Gardens in New York,
wow,
doing a single song with a DJ by the name of Bass Nectar.
Okay. Yeah,
you
yeah.
know Bass Nectar?
I know Bass Nectar.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Haley wrote a song with him called You and Me,
yeah,
which he, in Rolling Stone magazine, said was one of the best tunes he's ever been involved in.
That's amazing.
And so he's invited her to perform for 25,000 people
yeah.
at Madison Square. She did that, so I'm rambling on here, but she did that a couple of months ago at the Red Rock Amphitheater outside of Denver for 10,000 people.
Yeah.
So this Bass Nectar dude is pretty hot tomatoes.
No kidding, yeah.
And anyway, so so she's on a really interesting role yeah. and good stuff.
You sound really proud.
Proud, yeah, deeply.
Indeed. So what is that? I'm just trying to think of what that means then, seeing as you're playing Captain Hook, you know, very soon, right? If she's Wendy yeah. Darling and you're Captain Hook.
It's an interesting sort of juxtaposition of some some universal force or
yeah.
whatever. Yeah, I'm not sure what that means yet.
I'm not sure either.
And I may not do any analyzing of that because it would take too much brain power.
That's right.
And maybe it's none of my business in the first place. So there you go.
Sorry, it's just it when an opportunity arises like that,
totally,
you gotta
go there.
Yeah.
I understand.
No, it's that's perfect. And I think I feel like the announcement of you as Captain Hook came around the same time as I think Christopher Walken is playing Captain Hook, isn't he?
Is he?
I think he
that's
is.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I'm really excited about this Hook. I did it 10
yeah.
years ago, but a lot has happened in 10 years, and I'm a different.
You're a different Hook?
I'm a different person now.
Yeah.
And I think I'm an older Hook, you know, and I've got the big white beard now.
Yeah.
And my thought is I'm going to do the Jack Sparrow thing and, you know, put
little
clips of creatures dangling from the bottom of my beard. And, I'm really excited about approaching this Hook. It's going to take on a little different direction, I think.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I want to re-explore the whole Wendy Darling concept for just a second, because it just it dawned on me this story that Billy Bragg tells. I'm sure you're familiar with Billy Bragg,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
He told a great story on a podcast to Marc Maron about how his son took up playing guitar, and how there's so basically his son is up in his room playing guitar and he's learning one of Billy's songs, and he can hear him through the amp downstairs, and he's talking to his wife, should I go up and, you know, tell him what the next chord is or whatever, and he keeps hearing the son screw up the chord over and over again.
Yeah.
Did you ever have any moments in that vein, or did she sort of independently start to become a songwriter without your guidance?
No, she is very musical, obviously.
Yeah.
She was involved in choral work at school and operettas, et cetera.
That's where it all starts, huh?
Yeah, exactly. She played a little bit of piano, took some lessons on that side, but she'd never played guitar. And when she was, either grade 11 or 12, they were having a talent show, like the next day.
Yeah.
And she said, I want to play the talent show. Can you teach me a song on guitar? She's never played guitar.
Really?
I said, okay, well, let's figure out a tune. And I have to ask her about what song it was. Because basically what I did is I showed her a simple, playing a G chord, the first inversion, so the second, third, and fourth strings.
Yeah.
Just those three strings alone. And if you take that whole thing, slide it up to the D, and to the C, and then the D form.
Yeah.
Then you can keep that one physical progression moving in those three areas, and it was just a three chord tune.
Yeah.
But it because it was an open thing, you got all these other overtones that happened. And anyway, so I taught her that simple form.
Yeah.
And she knew the song already, and she instantly put it together and did it the next day. I thought, oh, Haley, my goodness, she has the courage to approach the music from trust in herself.
Yeah.
Which is something that I've had in my life. I get into any environment, any performing space, and I can find a way of making it work.
Yeah.
And she has that. So I'm glad that I put that onto her. She has the organizational skills from my wife.
Yeah.
So she's cool on that. As far as teaching her some, or listening to her play and wanting to encourage something a little more accurately. That happened more on the in the vocal world, where she would sing something or she would write something and she would sing consonants. And I would say, you really can't sing consonants. You know, you sing vowels.
Yeah.
You don't sing consonants. And so that concept didn't quite connect with her. She really wanted to sing. So, and she still goes into a little bit of that along the way, but she's learned to sing more vowels, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's all about the ahs and the oohs and the ees and that.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Ns are not great. They're not good vocal tones, that's all.
Yeah, it's true though, it's true. It sounds like a cell phone vibrating.
Yeah.
But that's interesting because she came to you to learn to play an instrument and then you're a self-taught guitar player, right?
Totally.
Yeah, so you learned how to play sort of out of this necessity to sort of, to participate in that world. What, was there a guitar player in particular that just made you want to like pick it up and start learning it? I think I've heard you say the Beatles in the past.
Well, certainly the Beatles were part of it. I got my first guitar when I was 15.
Okay.
My brother married a lady from Pelly, Saskatchewan.
Okay.
Not far from Yorkton in that world. And we were there for his wedding and went to the family prairie home.
Yeah.
And there on the back door of this big prairie kitchen was this old Stella guitar.
Okay.
And I'd never seen, we didn't have guitars at home.
No.
I'd never seen a guitar up close before. I thought, oh, look at that, look at that. There was something about it, you know, the vibration of just seeing it was something. So I asked, my brother's father-in-law, I said, can I look at that? He says, you can have that old thing.
What?
I said, what? Are you kidding? So, and it was a terrible guitar. It hadn't been touched for years in a really narrow neck. All the strings had come unwound. The action was terrible, but it was the most beautiful thing in the world for me. And I brought it back and I changed the strings and I learned a couple of songs that I performed at Kelvin, one of their coffee house things.
Yeah.
And then I got a nylon string guitar because it was much easier on my ever bloodied fingers.
Yeah.
So I just learned from books, learned the basic chords, meet up with friends. Have you tried doing that? Have you learned, Blackbird yet? Okay, well, you go here, and then you go here, and you go, okay.
Yeah.
There, you know, so that's one of the rites of passage for any guitar player, is learning to play Blackbird.
I have not overcome that hurdle yet.
Well,
I've been playing guitar.
We'll work on it later.
Yeah. Guitar lessons?
Sure, why not?
Oh my goodness,
give me a call. Have you got your guitar with you? Maybe the next segment of the show we'll do some Blackbird stuff.
It'll be an hour of you and I trying to figure out Blackbird. It'll end with someone's guitar getting smashed and I'm not trying to say I have a white hot temper, but you know, if I can't learn from you, who can I learn from?
Exactly. You know? I'll be very gentle, don't worry.
I believe you.
Thank you.
You already taught me The Cat Came Back.
There we are.
Yeah, okay. which my mother's a swim coach, and one of the big things about her is she's trained like Olympic athletes. So there's these like huge like Adonises that like they talk to her like children. Like they walk up to her and they're hey buddy, how's it going? And then they walk up to her and they're like, oh hello Donna, how are you doing today?
Yeah.
And I just find that really fascinating and sweet because it's sort of like she was there to train these people when they were younger, and then as adults they sort of have this degree of respect. Now you have the benefit of stature because you are a rather tall gentleman. How tall are you, by the way?
6'2".
6'2"? Yeah.
Ish.
So you're like professional wrestler size, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
So a couple hundred pounds. So yeah. So I do take up some space in this world.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have a certain stature to you that kind of demands a certain degree of respect. But like, I'll admit my entry point to your music wasn't even my childhood. Like I'd heard your songs and I'd seen you on TV, but I was never really pulled in by it. As an adult though, it was meeting you at that music festival that pulled me into sort of the character there. I know a lot of people grew up with your music and I know a lot of people's children are now listening to your music, but when an adult who's never seen you before, is all of a sudden pulled in, I mean, I gotta ask, where do you think that comes from?
Well, again, it's the human connection.
Right.
You know, I mean, someone who has never seen me before, they still get the full meal deal.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm on stage, it's eyeballing. It's making eye contact from front to back. It's scanning. It's connecting. It's giving over to the audience a chorus to sing. It's giving the story that supports the song.
Right.
You know, so with the my performing style is very engaging.
Yeah.
So even if you've never seen me before, you can still feel the energy and the connectivity that I do bring.
Right.
And I hope to bring into my work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I went and saw, are you familiar with Neutral Milk Hotel at all?
Oh, they were just playing at, in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And I missed them, but I heard they were, dynamite group. I mean, the buzz for them was just incredible.
Yeah. They have I went and saw their front man, Jeff Mangum. He did very sparse touring. And I went and saw them with a group of friends in Montreal. And one of the crazy things about that concert is, he demands that the audience sing along with him.
There you go.
And that just makes that show that much more, engaging. And it just makes it that much better because these are songs that are like, they feel like you're reading someone's diary in a way. Actually, it is. It's an album based on the diary of Anne Frank.
But oh, really?
Yeah. So he took that as a source material to write his most popular record.
Okay, there. I'm going to have to do some digging on him. That's or on them. That's great.
Oh, for sure. It's a heartbreaking and the symbolism in that album is so bizarre. There are words you're like, I don't think those go together, and then and then you learn from it, right?
Yeah.
Has there ever been sort of an abstract or an unusual experience that you've always wanted to turn into a piece of music, but it's like posed a challenge just in the relatability of it?
Not really. I'm constantly scrawling down bits of ideas and chunks as musicians do, you know, on napkins or little scraps of paper and with the hope that someday they will evolve into something else. And some time they actually do, you know, you think, oh yeah, I remember writing that thing, and you bring it forward, and because your experience has changed, you're able to take it the next step. I mean, the most challenging things that I've written over the while have been about human, values.
Yeah.
I wrote tunes for TP Tales, which is an Aboriginal based TV series with Eagle Vision, here in Winnipeg that has aired across the country. And part of that series was writing about the seven spiritual values of Aboriginal culture, which are just human values of love, truth, honesty, courage, humility, etc. And so writing songs about those elements is really exciting, but to find a way of doing that isn't didactic but is has a power to it.
Yeah.
And writing about humility was the most challenging thing. How do you write about humility? And what is humility?
I imagine it's an instrumental.
It's not an instrumental. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll play a bit of that when we get over to the music side, since we're talking about that piece. But, I can usually find a way, even with a difficult topic, I can find a way around it. If I'm working, I'll often play sort of opposite to the emotion of a song. So if it's a very intense kind of topic, I'm not going to make the music sort of draggy and intense to balance it, because then you're being pulled down on two levels, both lyrically and musically.
Yeah.
So I will go the other way. I'll make the music just a little, you know, a little brighter, have some sparkle to it, where it sort of offsets the intensity of a lyric.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just a personal technique.
Yeah.
Along the way. But,
because I think a lot of us start out, when we're first writing songs, trying to make sense of the bigger picture in life. I think that's just a trait. You know, kids in high school, the punk bands they start, they're like, I'm going to take down Walmart with this punk song, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
I think we all kind of want to write about something universal in the human condition, but something I find really fascinating from talking to so many musicians is sometimes you can write about something really personal and something very, very micro, let's say, and still relate to the sort of the grand scale of the grand scheme of things. And sometimes you can write something that's very broad and still, you know, appeal to a singular person. Do you find one of those to be more true than the other, or do you find one that you connect with more?
Well, it's the universal topic is important. It can be, as long as you avoid sort of words that are, if it's an emotional thing, then it's bound to be connected with by a percentage of the population. If you're talking about something as specific as that hoodie that you're wearing, you know, this is my favorite hoodie in the world. Well, no, that's not even a good example because everybody has a hoodie. but sometimes this happens often with children's writers, and I find it really frustrating where people will come to me and they say, I really want to write, I want to be a children's performer, I want to write songs. I've got this great tune that my kids love, and they, you know, we sing it to them every night at bed, and it's about something so specific that only relates to that parent and that child that it excludes the rest of the planet. It's you know, it's fun for what it is, but it doesn't have the, it's not ready to move into a broader spectrum.
Right.
So I go to them and I say, first point is, if you want to be an entertainer, a children's entertainer working with families, why do you want to do this?
Yeah.
What is your philosophy? What is your motivation? You know, it's a theatrical thing. You go back to the beginning. Why are you wanting to do this? To make money? Good luck. You know, that's as in every musician knows.
Yeah.
That ain't going to work. You know, you'll spend your whole life flogging a dead horse. You might get a corner along the way and a little spark will happen, but you're not going to make a lot of money generally as a musician. So you need to find a way of really satisfying yourself in whatever it is you do with the hope that others will connect along the way. And inevitably there will be a percentage. And I think now with the social media and the rest of that, you can put out, and this is sort of belaying our entire conversation, is you could put out anything about anything, even those little obscure specific things that I think would not deserve to go any farther. And somebody on the planet is going to say, yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
So then your 15 minutes of fame is all of a sudden, you know, perked up a little bit.
Yeah. How do you think you've obtained the longevity that you have? I mean, outside of the performance style, which we've touched upon a lot, I mean, what is it that, I don't know, do you have a ritual? Is there something in your life that's kept you, that not just kept you going, but that's something that's kept you level-headed all these years?
Well, apparently. But that's also the kind of a question that is none of my
business. Oh.
In another way. You know, I am very conscientious about how I approach things.
Right.
About the value that I try and bring to the table. The beginning of my career, you know, having worked with the special needs kids, you know, coming from a good family, but my dad was an alcoholic. And so there were some challenges in the family unit. I was a doting son. I went to university to complete a BA in economics to live out my father's dream because he was never able to go.
Right.
You know, so it was a loving, caring family, but there was still, you know, as with all families, you know, there is dysfunctionality along the way, but I was a good boy.
Yeah.
And as, you know, as time went by and I went to university and trying to be a good boy and working with, you know, Kiwanis Group and organizations that work with children and trying to bring my music to that, trying to find my identity, which is the bottom line. We're all searching for some kind of definition of who we are and how we fit into this insanity. And it is insanity. And so I finished my BA economics expecting somehow to move into the Central Mortgage and Housing Corporation to become an economist. And I was primed to do that. And then my sister Susie, Down syndrome child, she passed away, and my dad died a year later. So I had at my early 20s, these two massive mortality checks. And that was really the turning point for me. It's okay, I don't want to be an economist. I know that. What am I going to do? Well, what is it in my life? And fortunately, I had the foresight to be that analytical about myself. What do I want to do with my life? It's my life. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
And the only things that had given me personal bliss, you know, through my schooling year, etc., was music. I loved choirs from grade three, the operettas, the ski buses. Learning to be on stage and to perform has always been a part of my being. And so I thought, well, let's see if I can make a step going that way. I was a bright, you know, person. I would look people in the eye. I would try and communicate whatever I had.
Yeah.
Started playing my first gig was the Can-Can Lounge at the Balmoral Hotel. If any of your listeners are passing by the Can-Can Lounge a few years ago, it would have been Fred Penner, three nights.
That's right.
Thir Fry Sat for $75.
If you were witness to these events, please email us at tsapodcast@gmail.com. We'll screen your emails, but we will certainly get you in touch with Mr. Penner if you
There you go, and the autograph is in the mail. You know, so that's really where it began, and I did that, and people liked what I did, and then someone would come along and say, well, how would you like to play here? Oh. You think I could do that? Yeah, well, why don't you try it? So I was given the inspiration from others to try different things. And playing the Rainbow Stage World was a suggestion from a choral director, Peter Buchan, way back in the 70s. And I'd never thought of doing Rainbow Stage. And he said, well, you've got a good voice. Why don't you?
Yeah.
So I auditioned and that happened. You know, so it's always been, for most of the time, other people coming to me and saying, I like what you're doing, why don't you?
Yeah.
And as we go through life, there are people that we all have who do that, who come up and give you a pat on the back and say, Matt, you're doing a great job, why don't you try that? And you say, oh, I'd never considered that, why don't I? You know, and then you go that step. And that's what life is all about. That's what encouragement of each other is all about. You know, the last song of Fred Penner's Place is Take Good Care of Each Other. And that's what this is all about, is don't get so insulated in your own little world and your own little iPad, iPod, iPhone, etc., to forget about the direct communication that can happen between another human being and that spark of energy that you can feel and that encouragement that you can give to the other person that will maybe, without you even knowing it, make a difference in their life.
I couldn't have said those words any better myself.
And you can quote me on that.
I think I will. We'll write all that out and we'll make a graphic for it online and post it on the page. And
sure.
But that's what our culture, that's what it sounds like we need right now.
I'd say.
You spend any time on these sites they call, they're like clickbait. You know, it's whoever is like Jim Carrey's philosophy on how to make enrich your life and things like that. These short clips that people, they need to hear, they need that reassurance, they need to read it, because we spend so much time, I think, skewering and attacking other people and other things, and because it's easy, because it's you know, you're on Facebook and anybody can be a critic.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's true. I'm a little chagrined at where some of the technology is going, because people are trying to find their, again, it's back to identity. Putting their stuff on Facebook, putting their stuff online, things that perhaps should not be for public consumption.
Right.
But they're trying to find, they're trying to make their voice known, their position known in this world. And it often goes off on really negative tangents. But I think that what the technology often is doing is, because we are becoming so insulated or blinded into our own little thing that's happening, that we are forgetting about, again, about the big picture, which is, it's Big Brother, it's the government systems, it's the organizations that are trying to control us, the population. And this is a big part of my rant world, is the credit system. And everybody listening, avoid getting yourself trapped too far in the credit line. When the credit cards first came out, everybody thought, and this is, you don't know anything different, you know, from your age, I'm sure. But when it started coming out, it was, oh, isn't this fantastic? On this piece of plastic, this is access to my money in the bank. I can put it in here, ka-ching, ka-ching, and I don't have to carry cash anymore.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, but then you forget about what that really is, cash. Reaching in your pocket, putting down $20
is
much harder than putting a piece of plastic in a machine.
Yeah.
So you get trapped in that world. And that's exactly what the system wanted you to do. They wanted you to forget about really what the money is and get into the consumer process.
Yeah.
And you consume and consume. And all of a sudden you've got a $5,000 bill worked up.
Yeah.
And those blank, blank, explicative, deleted, bean counters are charging you 19.99. They don't even have the courage to say 20%.
Yeah.
One fifth of the money on the thing as interest.
Yeah.
Which is abusive, which is criminal.
Yeah.
In its essence. And the government should be saying, no, you can't charge more than 10% maximum, for any kind of overdraft thing. So it gets into that, and it's a full thing. Everybody's being manipulated on that credit system, and nobody is standing up and saying, I disagree with that. I think that's wrong.
Yeah.
So get away from the technology for a bit, or use the technology to challenge the system.
Yeah.
Because the system must be challenged. We are losing that ability within our lives to really step forward and say, put your hand up, put your fist up in the air and say, I'm not going to take this anymore. I refuse to take this anymore. I'm going to fight against it. You know, it's not quite anarchy, but it's not far away from it.
For sure. For sure. I didn't know this side of you existed.
Yeah, there it is. The rant. Oh, well, me and Rick Mercer, look out.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever had any conversations with him on that matter?
Not that intensely. I've met him a few times along the way, but he's right on.
Yeah.
In so many ways. But that really is a critical thing, is we are not, the government wants that's the system, not just the government, wants us to be lemmings. And wants us to work our lives up to the edge of the cliff and just drop off without any communication. Just be nice little people in our own little worlds and work and try and make your lives positive and happen. But it's backfiring tremendously, you know, and it's causing people under severe economic pressure to do things that are heinous.
Yeah.
You know, to killing spouses, to killing grandchildren, to killing yourself.
Yeah.
I really believe that that's where these mass killings, you know, the from Columbine on, I think that's where it's coming from, where there's so much pressure, so much lack of identity, and so much sense that you have no reason to live, that you might as well do something terrible, because who cares? Nobody cares, you know?
And so, in terms of that, sort of what you're writing in terms of the grand scheme of life in music is, I mean, what are you doing to sort of counteract that through song?
Well, it's through song. It again comes down to the value of essential topic.
Right.
So a song like "Home Is Where the Heart Is," "Home Is Where You Learn to Love." Find a quiet corner to play and to read. Surround yourself with things you need: music and books and toys. It's all part of a home. Home is where the heart is. You've got to be proud of the people around you, proud of the things that you do, proud of your dreams and feelings inside. Never afraid to let them shine through. Never afraid to let them come true. So it's through my lyric, through the word, it's encouragement of be the best person you can. You know, step up to the plate and express yourself and find the honesty and find your center and find your personal bliss, your joy. So, you know, because you can't say, don't kill people, don't go out and do that's where the didactic line comes in.
Yeah.
When you start pointing your finger and saying, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that.
Right.
Which should be self-evident.
but it
doesn't come down to that. So,
yeah.
So instead of getting into that, the finger pointing, it's, no, let's go this way. Let's go on the inside. Try to be a good person. Because then you feel better about yourself. The people around you want to relate to you. You develop an identity.
Right.
And it always goes back to identity for me. You develop an identity and a personality that people can relate to, that you can find like minds to relate to. And you get conversation going and you discover the beauty of things around you. You know, it's pretty obvious when I say it like that.
Yeah.
It is the challenge because we have to live within the confines of existence, but
But what can we do in those confines? How can we paint on the frame in a way, you know?
Well, it's trying not to get trapped into the things that the technology trap and becoming the consumer that the system wants you to be. It's very much a part of the want versus need concept. What do you really need to survive? Do you really have to get that iPhone 27 that's coming out next week? You know, it's only at 7. Oh, what is it? Where is it going? Do you really need that extra bit of technology? Are you okay with the one that you've got? Is it satisfying whatever need you have? Do you really have to go out and buy that next best thing? And that's what they try to, you know, convince you to do. And then you can't afford it, so you put it on plastic, and then you're trapped in the trying to pay off the plastic. If you have a family, you have to take extra jobs, which takes away from the family, so it becomes a really complicated maze of insanity. So it's go back to the beginning. The concept is voluntary simplicity. It's an existing organization where you learn how to balance your life emotionally, physically, spiritually. I did a program on that years ago called The Simple Way.
Yeah.
And there's organizations and communities across the country where there's a dozen families get together. They would like to have a boat to float on that piece of water. They can't really afford each of them to spend $10,000 on a boat. So they get together. They all throw in a grand. They get to use the boat when they need it. You know, they work out a schedule. So you have combined your efforts to get what you wanted.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, trapping yourself in the economic.
Well, I can see why you're stuck around Manitoba, especially an example would be the person bringing the chicken into the city hall meeting because the urban chicken is a financially viable option to eliminate
completely
the need to bring in poultry trucks. And then on the other hand, like this city is very much constantly pushing for a more of a communal identity. I mean, there's community gardens outside of Osborne, that area.
That's building, yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting that that's where you come from. And that's also the culture of the folk festival as well. That's sort of what I see with that. It seems like sort of this traveling caravan of, we're going to make a living playing music and sharing and establishing sort of that old, I don't want to say the gypsy mindset because that's a different thing altogether.
Completely.
But it is sort of, it goes back to sort of, you know, not, what's the right word here? Like it's a community basically.
Yeah. And that is happening and I am encouraged.
Yeah.
Been playing the folk festivals across the country. There are just so many wonderful young people and families who are embracing that existence and such great young players who are singing about that. And, that world is happening, but where the disconnect starts to happen is again, when you get to the government system and they're missing the boat on really supporting the things of value that are trying to work.
Right.
There's a lot of complexity in there, but the people are there who are trying to make that difference in their lives and the lives of people around them. So it's as disheartening as it may seem along the way, there is very strong evidence that we are on a good path to bring it together.
Well, I think that's a perfect note to end things on. I would like to ask, though, the last thing I like to do with every show is, I got this idea from Stuart McLean, actually.
Okay.
I have an audio clip of Stuart McLean swearing somewhere that I hold very dear to my heart.
Well, Stuart McLean here, I'm not used to expressing myself with the vernacular, but occasionally I do drift into four-letter words along the way. I don't know what kind of a word would be appropriate now, but perhaps a word that starts with the letter W. you can figure that one out yourself. It's a word that I use often in my own life, but Stuart McLean is certainly a person near and dear to my heart.
For sure, yeah. But he likes to pay it forward to people. And when I had the chance to interview him, he.
was it close at all?
It was good. No, I think he's a little more. He's a little more breathy, you know.
Stuart, oh yeah, yeah.
Dave Stuart laughed McLean, and Morley
Dave,
laughed.
Dave.
And, yeah.
Hi, Stuart. Stuart McLean. Stuart, yeah.
Now there's a turkey.
What's a turkey?
Turkey.
Yeah, he drifts off on.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
He takes the lifeboat out for a little spin. Yeah.
And we'll take a trip and we'll do Stuart McLean impersonations along the way, along with some Michael Caine.
Yeah.
Have you seen the trip?
I have not. No.
No. Oh, it's a brilliant, it's a great, great show. It's these two guys, Steve Coogan and Rob B something, right? Bryden. Anyway, they,
Bryden,
thank you. Rob Bryden, Stephen Coogan. And they have two shows. There's The Trip and The Trip to Italy.
Okay.
And they're both brilliant. And they're just traveling along and they get into the accents and.
Yeah.
And it's very, very entertaining with a little poignancy underneath. But what were you going
to
say?
Oh, I was just alluding to that. Do you have any recommendations cultural-wise, music-wise, anything that you would recommend to people to pay it forward to someone, especially with the vast well of knowledge you must have from all your experience in show business? For example, I've always wanted to ask you, is there an artist that you saw coming up that kind of got, you know, slipped through the cracks over the years that you think everyone should listen to?
Oh boy, Dear Serena sort of made her mark. We did some stuff a couple of years ago, before she broke.
Okay.
Serena Ryder and,
oh man.
You know, and we had a really good link and I've been doing some stuff with Hoxley Workman.
Okay.
And I've met Dan Mangan along the way. I wrote a song for their recent son, born about a year ago, named Jude. Dan's got a real spark.
You gotta be careful with songs about Jude, by the way.
Like, yeah.
Hello, Jude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a wealth of really fine young people coming up the pike. New Country Rehab.
Yeah.
The bass player in that, his name is Ben Whiteley.
Okay.
And Ben is the son of Ken Whiteley, who's the iconic folk player of Canadian history.
Yeah.
Music history. And Ben is covering some great directions. I mean, there's so many really wonderful artists out there. And I'm sure your listeners could probably tell me who to listen to. But at the same time, go back to some of the roots and connect with some Ella Fitzgerald and some Sarah Vaughan.
Yeah.
And listen to some of the original pieces that are being ripped off now and often used in contemporary things as their own.
Yeah. I have to ask, seeing as you mentioned Serena Ryder, I had her drunkenly get me to sing Time of Your Life from Dirty Dancing with her in Laughing Buddha in Sudbury, Ontario once.
Oh, the Laughing Buddha, yeah.
Yeah, I love it there. Yeah. Do you have any, like, you know, that's just Serena being Serena kind of stories, or? Because she's very mild-mannered, it seems, like.
She's just a great spark. I mean, I know, her partner, his name is Frank.
Yeah.
And Frank is good friends with a wonderful keyboard player by the name of Todor Kobakov.
Okay.
Who was with Little Sins.
Okay.
Small Sins.
Small Sins, yeah.
Yeah. He's the keyboard player with them. And he's just a brilliant, brilliant keyboard player, but we've hung out together in Toronto.
Okay.
Along the way, and Serena and I have sort of had this interesting kind of relationship where she suddenly pops up where I'm getting out of a car on College Street, and there's Serena and Frank. Oh, you know, that happened. She went to L.A.
Yeah.
She was living part-time there, just, hanging out. She went to a studio where my daughter happened to be recording.
Okay.
You know, so there's this Penner Serena Ryder thing that is coming from different directions at her. But she's an absolute sweetheart of lovely, lovely energy. She's doing great work. Yeah.
I think that she just has reacted to her fame in the most interesting way, and that is by being just going with it. Just enjoying the ride.
Well, she's always been there. She's down to earth.
Yeah.
You know, the level of notoriety, it's like Tegan and Sarah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're lovely human beings.
And they're always going to be Tegan and Sarah.
Yeah. And they have a core of solidity to them.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it is you get, you know, people like the Bieber.
Yeah.
Whose feet are, you know, 50 feet off the ground. He hasn't touched ground for I don't know how long.
He actually had somebody carry him up the Great Wall of China.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, so he's lost in that world, and I fear for his life. I
think for sure
he's going to be part of the 27 Club.
Oh,
you know, and I do fear for that because he is not grounded.
No,
you know, and people aren't giving him that support for being grounded. But Serena and Tegan and Sarah and many other of that generation do have their feet in the ground. They're doing great work. They love to connect.
Yeah,
and they're enjoying the ride, as you say.
For sure, for sure. Well, thank you so much for doing this show. I've enjoyed the ride the whole time, and it's really
it's
nice.
It's been a good one. I appreciate the depth of communication we got into and sharing some thoughts and feelings here.
For sure, yeah. And I love that you can look me in the eye from start to finish, and it hasn't gotten old yet.
There you go. And the phone's still ringing.
That's right. That's tsapodcast@gmail.com, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to send any letters to Fred and have me screen them.
Or fredpenner.com. The email comes straight to me.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to plug before we close up?
You can Twitter me if you want at Penner Fred or the real Fred Penner.
Yeah.
I probably won't answer or respond to anything, but you can be on the list.
For sure. Yeah.
And the fredpenner.com world, there's some tour information. It's a very meager kind of site, but it has some information to it.
It looks very serious.
Does it?
Yeah. All your photos look very serious on there.
There you go. Well, I'm a serious kind of guy. Belays my work, perhaps.
Indeed, indeed. Well, thank you again, and I'm looking forward to congratulations on the awards, and I'm looking forward to the show next Friday. I might be stage managing your venue, so.
Ooh, yes. Well, bonus, two times in a week. Thank you.
Exactly. Cheers.
You too.
So we've relocated here to the music studio here.
To the happy room.
That's right. It's got air conditioning and mood lighting. And Fred's going to play us a couple of songs in here.
A couple of tunes. We were chatting about humility before. The concept of writing songs about things that are a little bit difficult. And I'd written many tunes for the TP Tales TV series that I talked about.
Okay. And so how do you capture humility in a song?
Well, exactly. I mean, what is humility? You know, I often just go back to dictionary or do some Google on the word and what is it all about? And again, humility is part of identity and who you are and how you feel and how you fit into this spectrum of life around you. So that became the essence of the song. And again, thinking of it from a child's point of view or from the, most basic level of that. And this is the tune that came out of that. Not too big, not too small. Whoever you are is best of all. Don't try to be someone that you're not. Be proud of all you've got. Every morning you look in the mirror. Who is that person you see? Someone bossy or shy, someone with humility. Not too big, not too small, whoever you are is best of all. Don't try to be someone that you're not, be proud of all you've got. Growing up isn't easy, it's true, let me take you by the hand. There are things you shouldn't do, and in time you'll understand. When someone hurts your feelings and you feel you want to cry, well, don't go and do the same thing to some other girl or guy. Some other girl or guy. Not too big, not too small, whoever you are is best of all. Don't try to be someone that you're not, be proud of all you've got. Not too big, not too small, whoever you are is best of all. Don't try to be someone that you're not, be proud of all you've got. be proud of all you've got. Be proud of all you've got. With slight variation along the way.
I found the minor in that one.
Exactly. Oh, it's interesting how I forgot. It's been a while since I've sung that.
Yeah.
I've been on vacation in between. So that one, there you go. That's the humility tune.
What kind of songs do you think about when you're on vacation?
It just sort of drifted. I wrote a couple of things that I'm working on. And my partner who was with me, is a huge Zeppelin fan.
Okay.
And so we started doing some Googling and documentaries on John Bonham and the Moby Dick 15-minute guitar solo. And so I started working on the Moby Dick guitar lick. And so that was one of my challenges on it. So I've got that, and I'm not going to play it for you, mind you. But that was one of the things that was in. So we got into some early of the rock world. Okay. Zeppelin. Yes, it was good. Good traveling music.
Excellent. What other songs did you want to play?
So this other tune is called "Building a House," and I was in Wells, B.C.
Okay.
Last summer, not the summer of 2013, and I was hired to run a week-long songwriting workshop with a dozen folks who would come in, and that was a challenge. I'd never done anything. I've done some songwriting, but not for an extended period of time. So getting into what makes a song, or how do you write a song, and the elements that you would bring to it, and how to inspire somebody else to do that, was a challenge. But in the midst of trying to inspire others, I found myself getting into the mode of wanting to write. And I was in the Wells, B.C. Restaurant at the Wells Hotel, and there was a guy who was with some friends and talking about how life was going off on a tangent that he hadn't expected. He hadn't been paid for a month, and maybe he would go here and do this. And so he was basically giving me his whole life perspective.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is great, great material. So I got on my pad and paper and I wrote this tune.
Yeah. Does he get songwriting credit at all?
No, he doesn't. But I did sing it for him. The next night I played the local dance hall. And I sang it for him, and he came up after and said, "I recognize that song," or "I recognize the material." Anyway, so it was quite a neat little moment. But the tune came out, and it's sort of country-ish in feel, but with another turn to it. And I liked the way it came, and it had a good full form to it. And so this is "Building a House."
Okay.
I'm thinking about building a house on top of a hill. Maybe someday, maybe I will. But before I do, I'd like to see the world. Before I do, I'd like to see the world. I'm thinking about settling down, kids and a wife. I could be happy the rest of my life. But before I do, I'd like to see the world. Before I do, I'd like to see the world. I'd like to take a plane to Amsterdam by myself, find out who I am. Europe and Asia are beckoning me. Say, hurry boy, while you're fancy free. Or a Eurail pass, hop on a train north to south, back again. When the wanderlust is put to bed, I'll hurry home, rest my weary head. I'm disconnected, ill at ease. Will I ever find peace in the lakes and trees? My heart tells me, learn to chill. My head keeps saying, you never will. Isn't life made up of dreams? Is anything really the way it seems? Countries crumble, people cry, I'd feel regret if I didn't try, if I didn't try. Thinking about building a house on top of a hill. Maybe someday, maybe I will, but before I do, I'd like to see the world. Before I do, I'd like to see the world. Before I do, I'd like to see the world. Thunderous applause. The audience goes wild.
I know not to clap with my hands in front of a microphone because it doesn't get picked up as well as if you slap your knees.
So. Exactly.
Well, did you have anything else you wanted to play to finish this off? Or?
You never know. The cat came back the very next day. The cat came back. They thought he was a gone, but the cat came back. He just couldn't stay away from 1893 to the University of Manitoba. Old Mr. Johnson had troubles of his own, had a yellow cat who wouldn't leave his home. He tried and he tried to give the cat away. He gave it to a man going far, far away. But the cat came back the very next day. The cat came back. They thought he was a goner, but the cat came back. He just couldn't stay away. Yeah, so this tune has taken me a lot of places over the last 40 years thereabouts. And it evolved slightly as we were talking. Hit the road, cat, don't you come back no more. Hit the road, cat, don't you come back no more. That lovely E minor D, C, B7 progression also brought this one to mind. Trying, no time to get down cause I'm moving up. No time to get down cause I'm moving up. No time to get down cause I'm moving up. Ah, check out the cat in the bucket. I actually performed that once with Kevin from Chaos at the Mount Royal College in Calgary. Yeah. And it was a very sweet moment because we'd spoken before and he knew that I was doing this and gave me his blessing to throw that into the mix. So it was a nice thing. And who knows, other songs may arrive at the Pyramid Cafe a week tomorrow at 9 o'clock. In fact, I can guarantee that this song will happen, and there's another variation we'll throw into the end that I won't share now. But the cat came back the very next day. Cat came back. They thought he was a goner. But the cat came back. He just couldn't stay away.
That's a wrap on the show this week. Let's just take a few minutes to process what just happened there. I just sat down with an Order of Manitoba and talked to him about weird psychedelics and comedy. We got to talk about politics, what Fred thinks is wrong with the political system. That, my friends, is that's one for the ages for me. I'm still smiling about it. So thanks, Fred, for joining me in the studio at UMFM for doing that. And thank you so much to you guys for tuning in. If you want to stay the course with this show, follow us at TSA Pod on Twitter. You can also email us, tsapodcast@gmail.com. You can like and subscribe and follow us. We've got a Facebook page. We've got an account on iTunes where you can get every episode. Go back to the first 42 episodes before this. Find what treasures lie within them, or one man's treasure is another man's trash is sort of the the inverse of that thought. On next week's show, I'll be talking to a comedian and a five-star fringe performer, Bill Patz. I managed to sit down with him for an hour before he left Winnipeg, for good it seems. So that's coming up next week. If you want to check out Fred live, don't forget to go to the Pyramid Cabaret on October the 4th to check him out. He's doing a show with his full band. He's got the Wet Secrets doing that show as well, and Mariachi Ghost, just to name a couple. Amazing bands. Be sure to check that out. And if you want to hear me play a little more guitar like you did off the top of the show, come down to Moz Eatery on October 8th. I'm performing a night of whiskey-fueled fairy tales. I'll be doing a handful of songs. I'll be inviting guests up on the stage. It's going to be just an overall good time. It's a free show. Just come hang out at Moz, you know. Come be part of the atmosphere. Come be part of the scene, basically. All right. So what else do I normally do at the end of the show here? Oh yeah, our theme music is performed by Tyson Brinicombe. You can check him out on Label Fantastic. He just put out a new record called Casio Fiasco. And the music in the background here is performed by NASA, and they just put out a new record called Losing Weight. You can download that off the internet as well if you look it up on Bandcamp. So yeah, thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Matt Moskal, and remember, support your local everything, and everybody opens for somebody sometime.
Every morning you look in the mirror. No, that's wrong. I forgot the second verse. Oh, golly. Too small, if you are. Proud of all you got. Oh, there it is. Okay, we can keep that going here. Growing up is... This is live theater. You can cut it if you want or just leave it in.